Mustache, dude. I'm sporting right now. It's a little thing with me and my son. That's how bored we are over here.
I'm digging it, dude.
Taking turns grooming facial hair in different ways.
Dude, I got last week Meg gave me a haircut. So basically, she just shaved kind of up to the parts, but like the top of my hair is like starting to get it's growing. I mean, I've taken to wearing a lot of hats lately. So it's
right. Just to keep it simple, man. Just to keep it simple. Yeah, this quarantine is crazy, man.
Yeah. Well, on the good side of it, I mean, people are getting pissed. People are getting the curve is flattened. We should be able to go outside and play now. It's like, well, you know, I don't.
I was talking to somebody last night about that. Yeah, you could think that in one way, but would you rather err on the side of caution and not end up having to do this through December?
Exactly.
Because we have another spike, you know? I'd rather take time off right now than this continue on till the end of the year.
Totally. I mean, I'm obviously my situation's different than some others because fortunately, I work for a big company, so they're just like, hey, go home and do work. You know, they basically,
right?
Basically, my company gave us all of the crap ass work that they kind of dole out through the year. They just said, hey, do all this now. So all of like our computer tests, our certifications, like admin inputs and stuff. So we're not doing anything that we wouldn't be doing. We're doing the stuff that we normally have to take special time to do. So it's,
and that's good. I was telling somebody last night, his company, he's doing all the safety courses, the monthly safety courses they're supposed to do throughout the year. So this is keeping people busy, you know, and a lot of folks, I would say the majority are still working from what I can see.
Yeah, there's a lot of people still working. And, you know, I feel for everybody because, I mean, the events industry, the concert industry, musicians, the restaurant industry, like there's so many bunches of folks whose entire livelihood's in the crapper. But at the same time, there's things like pulling back a slingshot. Like the further you pull it, the faster and harder that bullet's going to fly when you let it go, because people are going to want to go on vacation. They're going to, they're gonna want to eat out. They're gonna want to party.
Well, I think even that is going to be a slow ramp up because a lot of folks aren't going to be the first ones out.
Well,
once they start lifting
stuff. Well, and I agree, but what I mean is like once you can start doing stuff, like if you can start going out to eat again, you know, it's like if you want to go to a bar, even if they go in and they're like, okay, the restaurant hosts, you know. Fire code capacity, we've got 20 tables and we're only allowed to fill 10 of them. Those 10 are going to be filled pretty dang fast.
Yeah.
You know, people are going to want to come in and sit down and, you know, have drinks poured and, you know, music and light and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it. This is episode 152 of Scary Dad Podcast. It is April 20th, 2020. If you were a younger, less mature person, you might giggle at that, but I'm
happy 420 day.
Like, whatever, dude. it's funny though, because as like legality happens across the country, like it's less and less silly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
When Cheech and Chong were talking about it, it's like, oh man, that's silly. Now you're just like you got all these housewives selling CBD. Like
it's definitely part of mainstream all of a sudden.
All right, let's see here, Mr. Gomez Adams, what you got?
First, the old business.
Okay, kind of a slow news day. A lot of birthdays, but on this date in 1918, Manfred von Richthofen, the Red Baron, shoots down his 79th and 80th victims. That is a lot of folks.
Oh, yeah.
It's his final victories before his death the next day. He shot those two down, and then the next day he crashed.
Okay. And you know, it's just when you really look at it, it's even more amazing a feat like that, considering the technology they had back then with airplanes compared to now.
Absolute
I
dude.
mean, you want to talk about a badass. Dude was a badass.
Because if you think about the airplanes, and I mean, it's more than this, but I heard it was a World War II pilot who flew like the Spitfires, talking about those World War I biplanes, and it's like he's like, yeah, it's like flying a lawnmower. It's like they're not held together too well. You've got a wooden frame with like canvas coverings and like a rudimentary engine on the front. You know, it's like it wasn't very good technology. So if you can loop to loop, you know, really excuse me, get one over on your folks.
And with dogfighting, I mean, you didn't have missile guidance systems, you didn't have, radar. You didn't have all the tools they have now to assist in that. You know, it was natural ability and instinct is all they went on, man. It's absolutely amazing to think about what they could do.
All right. Fast forward a long time to 2008. Danica Patrick wins the Indy Japan 300, the first woman to win an Indy car race at all. And I think she's still like one of the only female racers. Right.
Yes, is she still racing?
If she's not racing, she's at least still the face of the industry. I don't think there's any other female racers.
Well, yeah, there's one. I remember a viral video. This was years ago, but there was a Spain. I want to say she was from Spain, a racer, and her and Danica actually got into a fight in the
Oh,
pit,
nice.
to where I think the woman threw water in Danica's face and stuff because they were going back and forth. But yeah, there's not, still not many.
Yeah.
There may be two or three at the most. But yeah, she definitely broke a barrier for women in that sport.
And then we get to notable births. It's not a happy birthday, but today is the day, one of the let's just say we're a horror podcast and he made lots of horror. Adolf Hitler was born on this date in 1889.
Oh, I finally got through watching season four of Preacher, so I finally got the final season out of the way.
Nice.
In it, Adolf ends up taking over hell, which is interesting. He ends up somebody Satan ends up getting killed, and Hitler just kind of steps into his office, takes the chair, and takes it over.
It was sillier news in this date in 1937. George Takei, Captain Sulu. He's the
Yes.
pilot of the Starship Enterprise in the original series. And then he's had a very interesting, weird sort of second career as an internet personality, just
Yeah, as a pop
as a
culture
Twitter
icon.
guy. And he's for whatever reason very famous for saying, "Oh my."
He speaks, and a lot of people listen nowadays.
All right, this date in 1949, Jessica Lange. Awesome actress, been in a lot of stuff. Most notably lately has been American Horror Story. Not horror related, but in 1951, Luther Vandross.
The first major concert I went to, I went tickets for a radio show when I was like 13 or 14 for the Luther Vandross
That's
concert.
awesome.
Keith Sweat was opening for him, and I went to see him at the Cajun Dome in Lafayette, Louisiana.
That's badass. All right, this date in 1964, Crispin Glover. You may,
I love him so much. He's just so weird.
dude. He's naturally weird too. Like
Yeah,
you
that's the
can't
thing.
be that weird. Like it can't be an act all the time because he's been steadily weird for 40 years.
Oh,
And
yeah.
lately at the house, we've been on this kind of kick with the girls. It's like we're tired of watching your same old shows. We want to watch stuff that we can watch too, that we can enjoy. So, strangely enough, I don't know why it was, but like Back to the Future 2 and 3 are both on Netflix, but
Yeah.
part one isn't. So we ended up having to buy it on Prime or on Amazon. But we watched Back to the Future 1 last night, and he's a pretty good actor. I mean, the
Yeah, he
role of
is.
George McFly was not couldn't have been easy with his like as awkward and kind of weird as McFly had to be. He had to play two different ages and stuff. But he got totally sideways with the director by lecturing him about the end of Back to the Future. You heard that story? Like,
no,
because you know how, like, at the beginning, they're kind of living, they're basically poor, and Biff's still a bully, and like their whole life sucks.
Yeah.
And then after the dad showed some assertiveness, and the mother actually fell in love with George because he was a hero and not because he got hit by a car.
Yeah, he protected her. Right. From something. And so became the alpha male.
So then dad grew up and was actually, you know, so stands to reason that they're better financially off than they were before. Crispin Glover had a big problem with that. He did not like the lesson of Back to the Future being financial or material gain. Like, that wasn't the point. Well, really, there wasn't a point. It was a fun 80s action movie, right? Like, that's really at the heart of it. There was no, like, there wasn't some kind of pronounced moral other than, like, take enough plutonium with you whenever you go in time, you know? But, so yeah, he got booted off the sequels.
But I could totally see him pointing that out and making that argument. Yeah. Just from what I imagine he's like in real life. I mean, you can see he's the type that you can see that his characters are a lot of what he actually is. A lot of his own personality goes into his character.
Spaz dancing in part 4 of Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
It's funny because if you watch that video of him of them dancing, like, his dancing is completely offbeat and it's weird, right?
Yeah,
but it's just completely—it's shaky and spastic and strange, and the music in the background is like some kind of strange dance music. And he's like, "Oh no, I was dancing to AC/DC." But then if you look at it, you're like, "But still, like,
why would you dance like that to AC/DC?"
All right, 1964, Andy Serkis. He's been Gollum. He was in Planet of the Apes, King Kong. He's done a lot of work where he's not actually in front of the screen. And then recently, he was in Logan as one of the mutant bat guys. He's been doing a lot of stuff in front of the screen now.
Yeah.
All right, 1972. Happy birthday, Carmen Electra. Remember old Carmen?
She was recently, when Fitterman had that sports signing recently over in Pasadena, she was in town for it.
Oh.
But yeah, I remember her well.
All right. And then notable deaths on this date in 1912, we lost author Bram Stoker, who brought us the good old Dracula.
On a quiet, probably stormy weekend back in the day.
Right.
That's when all those characters were born.
1992, Benny Hill. And in 1999, we lost Ravishing Rick Rude.
I remember him well. I was a Louisiana boy. You know, all kids watched wrestling back in the day. And what's funny is Rick Rude actually didn't have much talent as a wrestler, but his persona just made him a superstar. Man,
there's a lot of those guys that were just...
They actually had no ring presence at all. They sucked. But Ultimate Warrior, he would just run around slamming the ropes and everything. But he actually didn't have very much athletic ability. He was a huge man, though, bro. That was a big deal.
And a lot of those guys, like, I think it's strange how those wrestlers just seem to be falling off because, you know, they're all huge. I mean, obviously they put their bodies through hell, you know, banging them into things and stuff,
right.
But still, like, all the heart attacks and the strokes and stuff, like, those guys, they sacrificed a lot for that fame that they had.
Well, they are definitely athletes. I mean, you got to give them that. No bad. Even the ones in the worst shape in the world, the stuff they put their bodies through, that you got to have some type of athletic prowess to be able to do that.
Oh yeah. Well, what was it? I think The Rock one time was saying how, in, like, it wasn't The Rock, it was some former military guy. He was a Navy SEAL, and he'd gone through, you know, Hell Week with Navy SEALs and everything, and then he retired, and he was doing, like, UFC and stuff, and then he was going to do professional wrestling, and he's, like, the professional wrestling got him, like he, it wasn't that he couldn't hack it, he's just like, man, it's, like, because it's all these acrobatics, it was a different sort of thing, and it was highly punishing, because it's, like, coordinated aerial face kicking, right, like, it's not... It's not just like tumbling. It's high impact as well. And he's just like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Like, never, right. It's not worth it. So,
well, think about what stunt people do with their bodies and stuff with movies and everything. Essentially, you have to have the same ability to be a wrestler. Yep. And by the way, I really wish Colt Seavers would have actually won the other day against Boba Fett. Just so you know, but that's just because I grew up with that. I'm the unknown stunt man. I'll never forget that show from a kid, man, watching that shit. Fall Guy was awesome.
Dude, with all the response, the positive response we're having with What's Awesome, I'm making notes of the ones who aren't winning the certain polls, and then we're going to have, like, a Royal Rumble.
To see who can make it through.
Yeah, dude. Well, because everybody's involved, and they're enjoying it, and they're posting their own pictures and stuff, and it's really fun. So, like, on the appreciation days, it's more of like a, okay, cool, we had Colt Seavers came in second, and we had, you know, whoever it was that came in second in the first one. We're going to do like three or four, and then at the end, we're going to do like, okay, let's
bring your losers brackets in.
So, well, cool, man. Well, that is old business. Let's take a break. We'll come back and start new.
From the novel by Stephen King, creator of Carrie and The Shining, comes a chilling new tale. And it begins here.
Cujo? Cujo?
Cujo?
Lewis Teague, rated R, starts Friday, August 12th. Please check newspapers for a theater near you.
Okay, and we're back, and we'll go ahead and get right into it, Mr. Gomez.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, first I want to definitely do an RIP to... He'd probably be best considered as a character actor, but one of the greatest character actors ever, Mr. Brian Dennehy, has passed away at the age of 81. That's a guy that you see, he never changed his appearance. He always looked the same. He played certain roles so well. But Brian Dennehy, of course, died at the age of 81. Rambo First Blood, he was the evil sheriff. He actually played John Wayne Gacy in a TV movie called To Catch a Killer. And just Tommy Boy, just so much stuff. That Cocoon, he's just been in so much stuff. And he's one of those guys that we grew up seeing in character roles in so many movies.
Like made-for-TV type stuff.
Yep. And even the show, I don't know if you watched Blacklist, but I've watched most of them on Netflix and stuff. But he had the last role I know of him in was in Blacklist, where he just Brian Dennehy, just all recognizable to everybody. Not everybody might know his name, but they've seen a movie with him in it for sure. Definitely. So rest in peace, Mr. Brian Dennehy. And let's get on to some cooler stuff. As you may have heard, Doctor Strange 2, it's been confirmed that Sam Raimi will be directing the next installment of Doctor Strange, which is I can't wait. One, I can't wait to see the Bruce Campbell cameo, because you know he's going to be in there somewhere.
So what?
And just to see what Sam Raimi.
What I'm really, really hoping, because if you remember the beginning of Army of Darkness, or the end of Evil Dead 2 to the beginning of Army of Darkness, where he like got sucked into the portal. And you know they have in Doctor Strange, that's how they travel is through those portals.
Yeah.
I think it would be awesome if Doctor Strange is like wrapping up a portal and like Bruce Campbell, or not Bruce Campbell, but Ash flies through.
Right, or the car, flies through or something like that.
And
yeah.
then they're like looking at each other because it flies from portal to portal, and they're like, what was that?
You know, he's going to have some surprises in it. Sam Raimi is just known for his particular style of directing, which, except I can't wait to see what he's able to do with Doctor Strange. When the first Doctor Strange movie came out and the character started showing up in Marvel movies, I actually wasn't that receptive to it, I guess. It didn't excite me enough to where I went seeking out to watch it. But once I finally actually watched the Doctor Strange movie, it was awesome shit.
Man. See, that was the thing, is like, as a character, and, you know, because Thor was kind of the same way, like magical characters and stuff. Like I was never really big into Doctor Strange because, like, he had magical powers, but that was about it. So I was just not like all like entranced with him. It wasn't like Captain America where he could just punch somebody real hard. It was like, okay, he's got his right. the little round things on the ends of his fists and stuff, and he's wise. Okay, whatever. I enjoyed the Doctor Strange movie. I thought it was really well done. And, of course, his reappearance at the end of Endgame was pretty badass, too. So,
yeah,
like, that was a badass scene.
Oh, yeah. So it definitely made me a fan of Doctor Strange, for sure. Like I said, just beforehand, I guess I wasn't very familiar with Doctor Strange from the comic book, so I never was excited to see what he had to offer. And now that I have, I'm really looking forward to the part two. Faux show. A couple of Stephen King items in the news right now. I didn't even know they were remaking Firestarter. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Yeah, Blumhouse is remaking Stephen King's Firestarter. It's going to start shooting this year. And I'm actually kind of excited about that. I think that'll be it's a good time to remake that particular movie.
I agree.
With Blumhouse taking over with it, I got faith that it'll be a good movie. So Blumhouse tends to put out some good shit. They've kind of become one of the standard bearers of the new generation of horror movies. And also in Stephen King, you remember Sleepwalkers? Mm-hmm. Okay, did you know that the movie is kind of a cult favorite now? It was successful when it was released, of course, because the Stephen King name is behind it. But it's not one of those Stephen King movies that people put towards the top or anything like that. But I actually enjoy Sleepwalkers. I like the story and everything. But what has recently come out is Stephen King's wife, Tabitha, had actually pitched a sequel. She had come up with a concept for a sequel to Sleepwalkers, which I thought was kind of cool. Man, it would have been cool to see a part two of that movie. I think it might be too late now to revisit it as a part two. They probably have to go ahead and remake it and then do a part two from a new one, because it's been a while since that one came out. But I thought that was kind of cool. You never hear Tabitha King come up in any kind of...
Yeah.
In anything. So apparently she does have some influence with Stephen. And I'm really curious to see what else she's kind of had a hand in that Stephen King has come up with.
Stephen King, every time he writes anything, he gives it to her first. And if she likes it, it moves forward. And if she doesn't, it doesn't. So she's
okay.
She's literally had a hand in everything that's come out of him. She's the one that saved Carrie from the trash.
Okay.
So he was about three quarters done with that one, and he was in a fit of depression. He tossed the manuscript, and she pulled it out of the trash and read it and was like, no, you have to finish this. And then, of course, then it became the phenomenon that it did. It launched his career, turned him into Stephen, you know. Well, this is his first big hit, but it was a huge big hit, right? Like, the movie was made by Brian De Palma and had Sissy Spacek and John Travolta in the 70s. I mean, that's, you don't get bigger star power than that.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You know, but yeah, interesting. Sleepwalkers.
And the last thing, just something that is now on my must-have list for whenever it gets released this year, but Trivial Pursuit is coming out with an Ultimate Edition horror.
I saw that.
Game, which, it just sounds like it's going to be pretty badass. I used to love playing Trivial Pursuit. Of course, I haven't played it in forever and a day. But this is one that I think I'll be getting into. The thing is, with it being specific to horror, you got to find people to play against.
Yeah.
I just don't see me playing with my kids a horror-influenced Trivial Pursuit, because I would win every day.
Right.
But it's definitely something I want to own just to see. Because, you know, with our horror Jeopardy, just some of those questions that we came up with, I thought they were awesome just seeing that kind of trivia. You got 1,800 different questions with several different areas of horror, gore and death, psychological, killer, monster, comedy, paranormal. It just sounds like it's going to be a really, really awesome game, and I will definitely be trying to pick that up.
Nice.
And that's what I got for new business today. Anything you want to add? Anything that, of course, we got Dieter from, we didn't talk about him last time, but from Human Centipede, the crazy doctor from Human Centipede recently passed away. You know, I was watching Lloyd Cryer did a Facebook Live video yesterday. I think he's going to start doing it weekly just to reconnect with all the Frightmare folks, just keep the excitement building up and the community entertained. And he's going to have some guests that he brings on each week. But he was talking about Dieter, and they actually showed I thought this was crazy, but the year Dieter was at Texas Frightmare Weekend, that night by the pool, they did this kind of performance art where a group of people came out and they were actually wearing little thongs and stuff by the pool, and they made a human centipede. They actually went in and got together, and Dieter was out there with them and everything, goofing off and stuff.
Nice.
So he seems as though he was a really, really great guy, and he's definitely loved by horror fans across the globe for his role. Personally, Human Centipede isn't up there on my list of horror films, but
you know,
some of the folks absolutely love it.
You like what you like, right?
Right.
So next week we're going to be talking about some werewolf movies, and you know, I got that subscription to Shudder, so I've been watching some stuff, and you know, I've been watching some stuff that's good and some that's not so good. I mean, I'm enjoying having watched it. I mean, with horror, sometimes even the stuff that's not so good is still more fun than some other stuff.
It's still more fun, exactly. That's the thing. It's a fun experience watching some of the crap.
Exactly. So, but now that's what I got for right now. Other than God, I hope they got the sewer fixed. Monday they start on the foundation, and hopefully we can get this whole crap behind us over here, because it's been
right.
When I say my life has been running like a country song, bro, I probably laid it out before, but it's like the TV broke, then the stove broke, and then the sewer broke, and then we got to get sewer repair, and then I had a kid get sick, and nobody wants to go to the doctor because it's coronavirus, and the kid's not sick with coronavirus, but, you know.
Still needs help.
You know, and then we have this old, thermal scan thermometer to see if, you know. Of course, somehow, after 10 years, somehow it falls on the floor and breaks. So, of course, then everybody's scared of the COVID, so you can't buy thermometers. So it's like, okay, well, so then the doctor's like, does she have fever? You're like, I think so. Like, I mean, she feels warm. I can't really tell. We ordered one on Amazon. So now everybody's better, and that's good. Nobody actually had anything. It was just a little, you know, spring bug, but it was just like one after the other. After the other, after the other, after the other. Like, stop it.
Right. it's weird how you mentioned the thermometer just now. Things still haven't leveled off, where there's still a lot of shit that you can't find. Mm-hmm. It is weird stuff. I don't know if you're familiar with Lipton doesn't put them out, but it's called K-N-O-R-R. It's these little bags of like flavored noodles you can buy. For some reason, over the past, you know, month and a half, there's only one flavor available. Every store I go to, it's like people bought out every one of the good flavors, and all you can get now is chicken and broccoli. It is just so weird how there's certain items that you still can't find for shit.
Yeah, well, went to HEB the other day, you know, just regular run, needed, you know, eggs and milk and bread and stuff, like nothing significant. But I was just kind of like glancing down aisles, like the pasta aisle, empty.
No, nothing. You got to get there first thing, because I wanted to make mac and cheese for Easter, and I had to camp out one morning to make sure I got in there early enough to get the damn elbow macaroni, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, man. Just the kind of stuff that's missing is bizarre. And then other stuff that you would think is missing is right there. Like,
it's readily available. Yeah, I walked into a Food Town the other day, and there's antibacterial, which is a bunch of bullshit, but antibacterial hand soap and sanitizer right there, front huge display. But you still can't find a goddamn pack of, you know, Knorr Lipton noodles to cook. It's just, it's so odd, man.
Well, hopefully it'll start coming back around. All right, well, let's take a break and get back into the show.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
Last night, do you remember when you woke up and you said you were here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you meet? Who's here?
TV people.
Something's funny going on here next door. Something,
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know whatever's over this house.
Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
All righty.
All right, dude. Well, let me ask you a question, because we've talked about this several times throughout our podcast over the last couple of years, and it's one of those things that whenever I encounter it, sometimes I have to be like, so do you actually like movies, or are you just want to be a negative critic? So when you sit down to watch a scary movie, like, are you trying to, like, be balls out not scared, or do you just want to sit down and be entertained, and if it pops out like, oh, hey, I'm scared, that's awesome, it got me, right? Like, do you sit there and try to analyze it, or do you just enjoy it?
I just try to enjoy it, because like we've talked before, when it comes to the horror genre, there's such a broad spectrum that falls under there. Everything from dark comedy to, as we like to put it sometimes, torture porn. So I usually go into it with an open mind, just ready to be entertained. And if it ends up being really, really scary, then that's all the better.
Right.
But as long as I'm entertained by it, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think because there is a certain desensitization that, you know, if you watch a lot of scary movies, then certain things just aren't scary anymore, or you've seen it enough times, or, you know, like The Lost Boys, for example. Like, I remember probably about a year ago, like when we were doing Fresh Eyes on Lost Boys, right? I sat down with my wife and I was like, dude, it's ultimate 80s movie. It's, you know, Corey Feldman, Corey Haim, Kiefer Sutherland, you know,
awesome soundtrack.
Diane Weist. Like, it's one of the best movies, not just horror movies, but it was one of the best movies. And we sat down and watched it, and of course she had her opinions on it, but like, there was, she was like, that movie was scary. I was like, I've never thought The Lost Boys was scary.
No, okay,
I get it, there are some scenes where he jumps up out of the water, like the skeleton that's being melted down.
Yeah.
He like jumps up out of the water. There's a couple of little jumps like that where, like, the scene where they kill Marco, where he like explodes in blood in the cave and they're trying to get away from him. Like, there's a couple of suspenseful scenes, but I never considered Lost Boys frightening.
Right. It's entertaining as hell. Love the movie. But yeah, it's not what I would consider a scary movie. It's not going to keep me up
right
at night.
So often whenever I watch a movie or read comments or people are talking about this one or that one, or this is great or whatever, one thing I keep running into is like, oh, they were just using tropes. They were just, you know, like, it was full of tropes. It was full of jump scares and death by sex and, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Like,
there's nothing wrong with that.
That's what a horror movie is. If you take out all of the jump scares and the gore and the situational aspects of it, then it just becomes a summer camp movie, right?
Yeah.
Or a rom-com or an action movie or something, right? Like,
right.
So it bugs me whenever people dog on movies for having too many jump scares or calling it cheap or whatever. I'm like, no, I think a well done jump scare is that's effective. It should be.
It's effective, and you have to be able to, because it's some jump. What I love the most is a jump scare that is so well timed, and like we've talked before, similar to timing in comedy and timing with magicians. Mm-hmm. You know, with magicians, they want you to look over here. They're waving a shiny thing over here so you don't see what's happening here. So what's happening here entertains
right.
you and gets you every time. And a good jump scare is one that, and we talked about some jump scares before, where I could have watched a movie 20 times and I was gotten by the same incredible jump scare 20 times every time I've watched mm-hmm. it. I can appreciate that so much. Jump scares are something that I truly appreciate, and I don't consider them cheap at all, because it takes talent for a good jump scare.
Right. It's a setup and a spike. It's like a, you know, yeah. it's a set spike. And if it works, then all the better for it. And again, the misdirection, it's like, oh, it's the cat, or like, oh, it's the teapot, or, you know, whatever it may be. It's, again, that's sleight of hand. That's a misdirection. Yeah. And if put in the hands of a good director, it can keep you up at night. Even if the movie's not terribly scary, there can be a scene or a part of it that just sticks in your head forever, you know?
Right.
And so anyway, I got tired of people bitching about tropes. And we just talked about jump scares pretty good. But, you know, they're like, oh, of course they're going to be, you know, off in the woods or, you know, at an abandoned place. Like, why can't they be original? And it's like, okay, well, let's talk about these. So, first of all, like with many things, kind of like the word agenda, it's like, oh, so-and-so's got an agenda. Well, most people do. When you wake up in the morning and you're going to go shit, shower, shave, that's an agenda. It doesn't, it's not necessarily nefarious, but the news media has an agenda. Yeah, literally. It's like up on the cue cards. It's like, first we're going to talk about this, and then this, and this, and this, and this, and this. So
a supermarket has an agenda with its layout. It's designed to get you to walk through certain areas where you're going to end up grabbing items that you might not necessarily have grabbed. Agendas are everywhere.
Right. So when we talk about a trope, it's always placed by as if it's a negative. But the definition is the use of figurative language for artistic effect. It's also come to be used to describe common recurring literary or theoretical devices, sometimes called a cliche. Well, a cliche, too, is a callback to something. It's something that happens so often that you're familiar with it and you understand it thoroughly without having to be explained. So if you've got a short period of time and you want to get your point across, you use a cliche so people are like, oh, that's what that is. I recognize that thing, like the masked killer or, you know, the broody loner or something like that. It's like, yeah, we don't want to have to spend like Halloween, Rob Zombie remake, where he has to spend like an hour and a half explaining Michael Myers' shitty background. No, he's just some crazy kid who stabbed his sister and then move on.
Yeah.
So let's see, what's one of them? The abandoned place.
What is scarier than an abandoned place? It's an effective trope with horror movies.
Yeah, because you don't know what's around the corner, and you don't know like, you don't know what's in the basement, and you don't know if the danger is, you know, a person. It could be a monster. you know, it could be a rabid badger in there, right? Like Cujo, for example.
Right.
It's like you don't know what the danger is until it's explored, and then once it's explored, then maybe it's not dangerous at all, but it's scary the whole time you're exploring it.
During that period of uncertainty where you don't know what's actually there. Yeah, I mean, just as a kid, I don't know if you did this as a kid, but I remember going to my grandmother's house way out in the middle of nowhere. They had a barn that was used at one time or another, but wasn't used anymore. And just going, every time I go explore that barn, it's an abandoned place that I have no idea what's in there. You don't know what you're going to run mm-hmm. into. It's an effective trope,
yeah.
You know, that I can appreciate.
Because it's scary even without something scary in it.
Yeah, because you don't know. You don't know what you're going to find.
Yeah, the light and the shadows. And again, even outside of a movie, if you've got an abandoned barn, then you got stuff that could fall on you. You got bats up there. You know, you can have mm-hmm. stuff living in the hay. Like, it's – then you add something malevolent in there. That makes it worse. You know, right. Add something not cool. All right. Here's the thing. The no phone coverage, the car doesn't work, or you can't call for help. Well, all three of those things is a legitimate human fear. The inability to call for help, the car doesn't work, or whatever else. And sometimes it's done well. Like, I know we mentioned it that one time that, like in Friday Part 3, like everybody's like, oh yeah, the car doesn't work. Yeah, the car doesn't work because the guys at the beginning drained the vehicle of gas. Remember?
Yeah.
It wasn't an afterthought that this car just broke down. Like in Back to the Future, the car breaks down like constantly. It's like, that's a pretty shitty car.
Yeah, for no reason. Yeah, it leaves a plot hole as to why is the car doing that. Yeah, Friday the 13th Part 3 did it well because they there was the setup, and then that's when the trope happened. So it was definitely no plot holes. It was good continuity. It made sense. Right.
You know, the no phone coverage. I have a series of masterclasses it's called Masterclass, and it's like writing workshops and stuff, and it's done by like Neil Gaiman did one, and R.L. Stine, who writes all the whole mm-hmm. the children's horror stories.
Right.
He's like, you have to get rid of the phone. Like, the phone has to be the first thing to go. You got to figure out a way to get rid of the phone, because as long as the phone's available, all they got to do is call the police.
It is a lifeline to go ahead and get
help. He's like, so you got to find a way to get rid of the phones. You got to shut down the power of the internet, something, because otherwise there's no menace. And it's like, is it a trope? Maybe, but it's one of those things like, nobody who's got a working cell phone and a, like, you know, fully loaded pistol is worried. They're just like, okay, I'm gonna go sit here in the corner and shoot anything that comes my way while I'm waiting for the police to show up. Like, that's gonna make for a pretty short movie. Yeah. You know. Let's see. Death by sex.
Yes, the sin clause, right. Where if you, it's not just sex, if you do drugs or have sex in an 80s horror movie, you're going to die.
Which, I mean, I think they deserve it, but I'm joking.
And that was really death by sex, death by sin. It's really an 80s thing, because now it's kind of gone away. Mm-hmm. You don't have that, because it's, you know, at that time, it was premarital sex. We still weren't far from that age and that era and that generation where premarital sex was a bad thing. So it was nowadays, because it's more socially acceptable for people to have sex.
See, and
you don't see it as often now.
See, I would almost go, I would almost make a strange philosophical argument that the people who were making a movie like Friday the 13th or Sleepaway Camp or Halloween even, They weren't thinking in terms of religious mores whenever they were making these slasher movies full of naked people. I'm thinking just in terms of storytelling. When are you at your most vulnerable? Like, when is your attention? Like, when is a masked killer going to be able to sneak into your house and you not hear them come in?
Right. Yeah, and you're not aware, not paying attention. Yeah.
That it just it takes the attention of the victims away from it long enough for it to be plausible that mm-hmm. you know that it's happening. You know, you got the shower on, you're not hearing them come in. You got, you know,
right.
You're washing up afterwards. You're naked in the lake. Whatever it is that you know, because I'm not sure that a lot of these 80s slasher movies were necessarily morality tales. They were just meat grinders for to earn a buck. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's why the trope's so effective, is because, yeah, if you were not having sex and you were downstairs where you're supposed to be, then you heard the guy come in and you went and investigated and you got the hell out of there. It gave you time to arm right. up. Yeah. Let's see here. The vengeful spirit.
Which has become, while we did have that in the 80s during the golden age of horror, it seems to become, it has become a lot more popular as of late mm-hmm. in the 2000s and on. And I think a lot of it has to do with the proliferation of ghost hunter. Just the people's interest in the paranormal yeah. has increased tremendously. So it's what the people want. You know?
And I think, too, a lot of that stuff comes from Japan, because Japan has a lot of folk tales about vengeful spirits, you know, the kind of stuff mm-hmm. that if you see them, you're going to die. Stuff like The Ring and The Grudge and right. stuff like that. You know, we've got a lot of stuff that was remade from Japan, Japanese cinema, that has that as kind of a central theme. Uh-huh. And it's like we said with, you know, those Japanese ghosts, they're not going to be satisfied. They don't care. They're not safe. You know, it's like, oh, well, we found the little girl and we put her in a proper grave. And she's like, I'm still dead and I'm still killing you. I don't care. And, but yeah, I mean, the opposite to a vengeful spirit is a peaceful one. So why are they scary? You know, it's like,
right.
They're just like, well, it's like, I think there's a ghost in her house, and all she wants to do is paint rainbows and smell like petunias. It's like, okay.
And you think you'd have that, you know, you just reminded me of a bit. I'm trying to remember who did this bit. I want to say it was John Mulaney, but he did a bit where, you know, think of spirits and ghosts. How come every like paranormal show or movie where they're dealing with, you know, vengeful spirits, they died in like the early 1900s or the 1800s? There's like no new ghosts. Mm-hmm. there's no new vengeful spirits of somebody that died like last week.
Yeah, that's true. No, they're always in Victorian garb. They're not like wearing their Rage Against the Machine t-shirt and like their right.
their ripped jeans. Their chain wallet dangling in the effervescence.
And then one that's kind of, I guess nobody ever, it was coined only in the last several years, but the whole idea of the final girl.
It's like, yeah.
Well, in my opinion, a final girl is a lot more interesting to see, like the call it like the David and Goliath sort of offsides battle against a heavily armed homicidal maniac and a
yeah everybody loves the underdog and wants to see girl, the underdog achieve.
Yeah, if it was some big burly dude named Sven who pops in with his own machete and just takes him down and be like, well, that was kind of interesting, but it's not very compelling.
Right. Like, you want to root for the underdog and see the underdog make it through. And that's why Final Girl has always been a successful trope. I mean, we've talked about it before, how, you know, whenever Wonder Woman came out and Captain Marvel, you know, about how these women were being empowered in movies. Horror movies have been empowering women for a long, long time.
Yeah, when they're like, oh, it's the first female lead in an action movie. And you're like,
Alien.
Yeah. We've been loving some Ripley for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Private Benjamin, Goldie Hawn.
I remember that movie well. What was that other one she made in the 80s where she was a football coach? What was it called? Wildcats. That's right. You remember that one? Yeah.
So I know you had some things that you had queued up to chat about.
Yeah, just some of the other things that you see often. Haunted houses would kind of go with vengeful spirits, but the woods, of course, hitchhikers. The crazy hitchhiker is a great, great trope in horror mm-hmm. movies, just to add that extra effect. You know, and there have been some great movies. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is known for hitchhikers.
They've got the weird sort of, it's not abandoned, but it's sort of an abandoned house whenever they show up and they see all the bones hanging from the from the patio. And then they've got the it's not a haunted house. I mean, I'm sure it is, but you know, it's
they have worse things that are living than they are haunted.
The abandoned place, the can't call for help. I mean, the jump scares. Texas Chainsaw Massacre has it all. That's why it's such a classic.
Yeah. I've rewatched 2 the other day. I still think 2 is my favorite one. I'll be totally honest with you. I just love 2. And another one that it's not quite played out yet because it's still being played out effectively with some movies, but The Creepy Clown is something that has just resurged and is everywhere now. And it just creepy clowns have been, like you and I have talked before, the clown that put my fear of clowns in me is from Poltergeist. Yep. Creepy clowns have been around and been effective for a long time, but it's also one that it's overused too. To a certain extent, for sure.
It is, but again, that's the whole thing with the trope is, like, if it's effective, it works.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. It's still, for the most part, it's still effective. People are doing it very well. The Terrifier, the Zombies is another one that's kind of been around for a long time. And I guess you see more of the ineffective use of some of these things just because of independent film, streaming services. You start to see some of the stuff that, you know, I love independent filmmakers, but not all of them are
good.
The greatest directors. Yeah, are good. So it can be overplayed sometimes to a certain effect for sure. And of course, the Backwoods Mutant
people, yeah.
Which that's another one that Backwoods Mutant people kind of use several tropes together whenever they're being implemented, because it's an idea of the unknown. Normally they're in abandoned places where people, the general public doesn't go. Hills have eyes. They're out in the middle of the desert, middle of nowhere, that, you know, you're very unlucky if you stumble upon them.
Yeah.
And very.
Yeah. The inability to call for help, I think, is what makes a lot of these two that's, you know, whether they get the phone lines cut, whether the car doesn't work, you know, all kinds of different things that it's like, you know, when the police do show up, like in Return of the Living Dead, when the police show up and all the dudes, they're like, hey, there's the cops. And then the zombies rip them apart. They're like, send more cops.
Send more.
And you're like, oh, yeah, we're not getting out of this.
Well, that's those movies that, you know, you and I always enjoy movies that actually don't have a happy ending, that are just dreadful. The Thing. The Thing is so effective because there's no way out of it. It's going to end bad for everybody. Well,
and that's the thing. Like, we started talking about the jump scares. Like, there's so many so perfectly timed jump scares in The Thing that you almost can't get got by them. Because it's right. So well done that it's like, you know, the arm chomping scene, or you know, the dog tearing itself apart or whatever. It's like like all of the characters react to the jump, the music reacts to the jump, the camera reacts to the jump, and so you almost can't not. You're sitting there just sitting still and just kind of, your eyes are just scanning it happen. You're not playing along. You know? Right. Like, you got to be like, oh, crap.
And that's what's crazy. You know, just over this past couple of years, because I have a different way of watching movies now, because I look for different things. I can appreciate the different effects that are used to make the perfect movie. Mm. The Thing has, like, totally jumped my list of greatest horror movies of all time. Yeah. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah, and that was one of those things, like, it's, we talked with fresh eyes, and we've talked about different movies, how it's like, I'm not gonna, like, I don't think we've done a fresh eyes on anything that I didn't enjoy, like, that I mm-hmm. was like, oh man, I would, you know, but there's certain things that you just see that you're just like, this right here, without being aware of it, because we were kids when we watched it, whoever made it, but this is the foundation for everything that's going to come after, right? Like,
yeah.
And The Thing is one of those. It's yeah. like, it's got that isolated Arctic, just, there's, you know, you can't call for help. You right. know,
it's just dread the whole yeah. time. And what I love about it is, because of the way it's set up, it's in the Arctic. There aren't a lot of pop culture references. It's timeless. Mm-hmm. No matter what age you are, or what generation you were born into, you can enjoy The Thing.
Yeah.
Because everything makes sense. Everything that they're doing makes sense. It's as close to a perfect horror movie as you're going to find.
Yep. The Fly. You know, we did the fresh eyes on The Fly. That was that yes. was another one of those that was like, as a kid, like, we just had a conversation, because we watched Back to the Future last night, and so I was like, okay, what's another fun 80s movie that the kids can enjoy that's not, you know, and I was like, how about Short Circuit? Like,
it's a great and, one. Yeah.
Juliet was like, what's a Short Circuit about? And my wife's like, it's about a robot. She's like, what's Terminator about? I was like, that's also about a robot, and you cannot watch that. She's like, you were watching Terminator when you were my age. I was like, no, I wasn't. Nope. No, I wasn't. I was older than 9 whenever Terminator came out. And Terminator is one of those too that's, even though there are a lot of, you know, like, kind of 80s cars and pop culture references in it, but it too is pretty timeless. Like,
yeah. just
getting chased down by a giant pissed off Arnold Schwarzenegger is never going to not be scary. You know?
Right. And one thing that helps movies like that, and also The Thing, as far as for being timeless classics that should never be remade because they were just so perfect to begin with, are the ability of some of the greatest special effects guys that we've ever known. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't need CGI. You know, you could look at a movie like the original Clash of the Titans, where they use the claymation and stop action filming. That ages very poorly. Yes. But with the type of practical effects that are done in Terminator and also The Thing, it never gets old.
Exactly. Exactly.
It never gets old, man.
Well, I have gone through my list, man. What else you got? Let's talk about some things that are upcoming. We are going to revive Fresh Eyes. I think we're going to do a triple play next week. We're going to be chatting about American Werewolf in London, Ginger Snaps, and The Howling. Just a couple, get our werewolf on. Next week, we've got
some interviews coming up. We definitely need to get back with the guys at the Houston Horror Film Festival to get caught up with them and what their plans are for their September show. Texas, I'm curious to see. I meant to message Lloyd the other day to see what the chances are that since the timing of Texas Frightmare Weekend has moved to a different month, does that open the door for some more guest announcements for some folks that weren't maybe available in May before and we may be seeing now, which that's pretty exciting. And definitely we need to set up ourselves to where we can start doing some interviews, because I know I'm sure you've been keeping up with Quarantine Con that's going to be going on with Dirk Strangely. He's looking to get with some podcasts to see about doing some interviews there also. And it's we've got some exciting stuff coming up, definitely, with the podcast. Yep,
and I'm all set up for it. Now that we've kind of got this thing situated to where we're sounding proper, then absolutely. we'll start. And then as long as I'm quarantined, I'm not going anywhere. So I can do this all day and all night.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny because with, you know, it's awesome, right? Like, so we've been recording on Mondays. And just same as with Scary Dad, we've been recording two episodes at a time. And then I took over, at the beginning, I was like, okay, I'll produce. So if you've listened to, you know, it's awesome, you know, there's some sound effects and just different stuff in it. We did our Saturday morning cartoons episode, and I went back and told Rick, I was like, dude, that's probably going to be the high water market for the special effects. Because it was like that production takes a while to get everything like lined up and proper. Yeah. But I just turned in episode 5, so that should be hitting on Tuesday, which is tomorrow. Scary Dad is hitting today, which is Monday. And I'm going to reach out to Dirk, reach out to John. We can reach out to Troy. Let's get some interviews lined up. And, yeah.
And have some fun. Have a good time, man.
So cool, man. Well, until next time, let's keep it scary.
Later.